night. It's Friday night, and thank you for joining us again here May the 12th on Lighting the Void. It's going to be a killer weekend. We're going to have some really cool stuff going on this weekend. Really cool guests coming up. Little news real quick. I can't be more excited, and I know this is going to sound nerdy to some of y'all, but all you gamers out there should be bouncing up and down right now like, you know, little kids in a candy store, because to me it looks like they're going to make an Assassin's Creed movie. And I don't know if you've seen the trailers, but it looks pretty rad. I mean, it looks pretty awesome, you know. I barely made it into the studio today. I got, of course, I don't know if you've seen the Facebook page. You can go to Lighting the Void, or Facebook, excuse me, .com/ Lighting the Void. You can message me on there during the show. And you can see the pictures of my newfound love, this cat. I used to hate cats, but now I love them. My little darling boy, Leo. And today he showed me his evil side. He's killing everything in the yard. Let me just put it to you like that. He ran across the yard with something in his mouth, and I went over there, and you can hear all the squirrels in the trees just barking away, and he just massacred a baby squirrel. And my uncle comes over, and you know, he decides, well, that's neat, I'll just skin the squirrel, right, because I live in Arkansas. And then my little cat eats the squirrel. And so I felt, I don't know, it was a very weird feeling to watch your animal devour another animal, although it is Mother Nature. You can't help but think what it would be like if these cats were the size of, you know, I don't know, tigers. Would they eat us? And then I attempted to give it a bath, and then it massacred me. So, yeah, that was all of my day leading up to the show today. And tonight we're going to have a very special guest. His name is Chris Gogos from alchemyworld.com. He has been on the Lawyer in Blue Jeans radio show and a couple other radio shows. It's very interesting how he uses what's called, I believe it's called Gematria. I'll let him speak about that. And he does readings and coachings for people. And it's pretty cool. I'm pretty impressed. And he is here with us now. How are you doing this evening, Chris? Oops, sorry about that, buddy. I had you muted. Go ahead. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Man, I'm doing better. I'm doing better. I just, like I said, that was a different experience to watch my little animal just annihilate another animal like that. It's just Mother Nature's a bitch, you know, sometimes.
Well, it's all in the DNA.
Yeah, that's
just the way God made the creatures, you know?
Yeah, and I was angry at first, you know, yelling, and he just kind of, you know, just ducked his head. And I started thinking, well, you know, he's only doing what he's meant to do, you know, like that's like,
exactly.
He's going to yell at me for eating a pizza or something. It don't work that way, right? So so tell us about your what you do, what it is that you do for people.
Sure. Essentially, what I do is two things. I have a technique which puts to work a couple of mathematical theorems, and at its most basic level, what I do is look at letters and numbers in people's original names and birth dates. With that data, just that, nothing else. I don't want to know if someone is happy or sad, or if they're married or single, or if they're working or not working. I don't want to know anything on the front end. I don't want any leading questions for someone to give me. Just give me their name and birth date is what I require, and then I do these calculations essentially. And once the calculations are done, I kind of have like what I call a engineering schematic, which is literally just a bunch of number patterns. It's like looking at an x-ray almost. And because I've been doing them for so long, I've seen certain patterns. And there's usually a 90% probability that the meanings will have the same impact on people. So this is where I get, I guess, my my street credibility for myself before I even go out on a limb and tell a potential person this, that, or the other thing about their personality and what that potential might mean and how it might manifest in their behavior. Because whether we like to think about it in these kinds of terms, as crazy and as weird as it sounds, that letters and numbers, if you go back in time, like in ancient history, what was discovered way back then is that letters and numbers were actually kind of the same thing. And we could go back and look at ancient cuneiform texts and script from back in, you know, like ancient Sumeria and even in Babylon. And what you'll see is that, sure enough, they had an alphabet of sorts. But when people back then were communicating with each other, they had a system that they could actually communicate with each other. And in that type of mode, an alphabet was formed. Well, now let's fast forward, and we can take a little detour through ancient Egypt. And I was mentioning to you before we went on air about the historical figure called Pythagoras.
Right.
Pythagoras was what most people historically would call the first philosopher. And when he was a kid, his father was, I think, a tradesman, and, you know, traveling up and down in that area. And Pythagoras was with his old man, pretty much, right? Coming and going. And he was very aware of all the knowledge that was around at that time. So he learned the technique of, well, I shouldn't say the technique. It was actually, he learned how to read and write hieroglyphics. Ancient hieroglyphics. And I think when he did that, he actually was able to get a glimpse into an entirely different mode of communicating. Because by that time, my understanding is the Egyptians had a very multi-dimensional way that they could codify information. And if you knew how to read and, I guess, write or interpret their alphabet, there was all kinds of information that would just jump out at you, literally, if you knew how to read hieroglyphics. So
what do you say to skeptics? What do you say to skeptics when they say, what do you say to skeptics when they come to you and they say, well, there's no way? I mean, I'm sure you get grilled on a constant basis, questioned.
Oh, yeah. You know,
what's your main thing to hit them back with?
Well, the main thing I say to them is, look, there's a physics to sound and the impact that sound has on physical matter, okay, on a material level. And I could give you, before I start talking about the letters and the numbers, let's just talk about something that most people can relate to that's obvious, okay? And it relates to sound and its effect on physical matter on a material level that's easily demonstrable and easily recognizable. If I was in your studio right now and I had a guitar there and I played an A minor, I will guarantee you 80-90% of the people listening will feel sad, because A minor is written in it's a sad sounding chord, right?
Right.
As opposed to, say, A major or C major, which would make you feel kind of happy because it resolves in its chord structure, right? And letters and numbers have something similar in their impact on people's personalities. And I could give you many examples tonight, and we could get feedback from people if they want to get a little sample profile done, or we could give some other examples. But the most obvious thing that I do when a critic, and it's a rightful kind of suspicion or reluctance to believe in all kinds of things until someone gives you some evidence, and I'm like that too. And as I told you, I think before, I've been trying to disprove this thing for many, many years, and I've only been validating it through the help of the people that I've been doing the reports for. So the other type of evidence that is there is there's a whole body of knowledge that's been around for a very, very long time. And it's kind of hard to argue with repeatable scientific method kinds of evidence. And I can give you an example relating to, say, well, we can pick any name. In fact, why don't we just do it random? You give me a name or a birth date of somebody that you personally know, and I'll use your reaction live right on the fly, like right now, and you can say, look, okay, here's a person that I know, and just give me very little. Give me their first given name and their birth date.
All right.
Okay? And I won't get too deep into some personal stuff where I'll embarrass them or anything like that.
No,
I'll just pick out a couple of major temperaments that I think are important, and but you have to know this person. Do you know, what I'm saying? Like, you really have to know them.
Sure.
Because I don't know them, right? And I'm just going to be commenting off the fly. So let's subject this supposition to a test, and then you can be the judge.
So the first name and the birthday.
Yeah.
Okay. First name would be Terry.
T-E-R-R-Y. Okay. And the birth date?
Would be February 23rd, 1956.
Okay. All right. Well, the most obvious thing right off the top is in an emergency or a crisis, Terry would be the kind of person that I believe is very quick, mentally speaking, and Terry probably wouldn't want to be working off of a plan, you know, looking through a book saying, I wonder what happens when there's a crisis and, you know, the crap hits the fan. Terry would be literally flying by, you know, just in real time, updating facts as they emerge, because as we know, in a crisis, things change awfully quick, right? And something that does not go according to plan, it's literally time to wing it and to really figure stuff out on the fly. So that's the first thing. The other thing to bear in mind is I think Terry's got this capacity to maybe get bored easily, and that could be a problem. It doesn't have to be a problem, but it could be. And one way to mitigate that is for Terry to be like a generalist, where it would be best to learn all kinds of things from other experts. And you know how we make fun of people that, you know, oh, you're a jack of all trades, master of none? Well, I would actually flip it around and say, Terry, it's better for you to be a generalist than be a specialist, because sometimes you need people like that in the group dynamic, because that could make or break the difference of a team succeeding at solving a problem that's happening like in real time versus the team completely falling apart. So what I will also suggest that Terry might want to do over the whole course of life for professional reasons is to make a careful distinction between people that have created what I call positive, nostalgic, sentimental recollections in their life. Now, you might say, well, geez, that's a general statement to make. You know, don't we all want to remember the nice experiences in our life? And yeah, that's kind of true. But in Terry's case, it can make the difference between success commercially or professionally speaking, more so than not. So Terry should never underestimate the power of keeping a Rolodex, you know, or like names and phone numbers and emails, like to stay on top of, say, maintaining a contact manager. That's the phrase I was looking for. If Terry, as weird as this sounds, if Terry could just get really good at maintaining a contact manager and separating people from, oh yeah, I had a great professional relationship with this person 5 years ago, versus putting other people in a list of, yeah, there was, you know, some shady dealings going on with this person, so I'm going to put them on my, like, you know, like on another list. But just that distinction alone will make all the difference in the world in a professional sense, positively speaking. Okay, the last thing I'm going to say about Terry, since the last birthday, which is recent, moving forward, because we do go through, these changes birthday to birthday, if I knew Terry before the last birthday, I would have suggested, like, almost 100%, I would have said, listen, if you can take some time off of work and go into a sabbatical mode, like where you just can drop out for a while, that would be very therapeutic. Because, see, a lot of people, you know how people get burnt out at work or they get burnt out in relationships?
Yeah.
They don't really need to, like, to get divorced or to leave that job. What they need is a break. They need a vacation, not to go to Florida or to kick back, you know, and relax like in the typical way. They actually need to extract themselves from the nonsense of what's going on in their life at that time, and to go and study something. In ancient times, when a person was going through a sabbatical, and I believe Terry's actually still in a sabbatical mode right now, in the ancient times, they would have literally left their family and would have went and lived in the woods or in the mountain in a cabin by themselves. Nobody's around. They're just on their own, and they're doing that sabbatical retreat technique that a lot of people have been trying to promote over the last, you know, as long as I can remember, anyway, 10, 15 years. They encourage people, if they can, to drop out of work for a while, go study something, and then, you know, your job will still be there in a year when you go back or something. So that's what I think Terry ought to be doing right now, is just, you know, some kind of sabbatical pursuit, and to get ready for the next cycle, which is actually got more to do with career, achieving, being more competitive, being more feisty, more combative, more just more into like putting in a good fight towards something relating to career-wise, right? But right now, that's not the operating principle that will do the most or provide the most benefit for Terry. Terry needs a break.
Well, I was going to ask you just one more question, and it's based on what you do. What is, and I know it might be hard with the first name, what is he here to overcome?
Okay, sure. Well, the first thing to overcome is the negative lower force of ego. See, ego is a double-edged sword. If you can harness ego and put it to work properly, then you become an effective leader in its most purest form. And if Terry can learn to not succumb to the lower forces of ego, willpower, and pride, like all the negative manifestations of that, if Terry can overcome that, then Terry will become an excellent leader. And if you want to see some evidence of that, look for those times when Terry might have been in a situation where there was a problem that needed to be solved. And all Terry did is he kind of knew who to ask for an opinion. He might have even just laid it out and said, look, here's the problem, and, you know, we need to contribute to the solutions because I can't be doing all the thinking for all of us, like, all the time, you know, and in a funny kind of way to lay it out like that and to encourage everybody that's got an invested interest in solving the problem to just put forth their best of, you know, their best of suggestions. And Terry, the constructive use of the leadership which is being developed would indicate that Terry would have to select the best of the ideas, regardless of where they came from and or who came up with them. And even if it wasn't from Terry, because a lot of people think if you're the leader, you have to be the one that comes up with the ideas, right? And, and that's not always the case. So a good leader needs to overcome the lower forces of willpower and pride, and to be able to recognize where the best ideas come from. And then when they spot that right idea, they go, that's the one. And then to use that leadership temperament to not necessarily convince everybody else, but just to say, listen, out of all the 50 ideas that were just put on the table, this is the one right here. This is the one that's going to work. And to just garner support from the team.
When you say, how does one overcome their ego? Is it admitting when you're wrong, or is it just putting others first? Or, I mean, what is that? What would be a good start? Because I'm going to tell you something. On the ego thing, I think it's hereditary, because we're talking about my father here. I'll just go ahead and spill it, you know.
Okay, but that's cool, and hereditary is fine as a context, for sure. However, the quickest, fastest way to overcome that, see, okay, for Terry to relinquish leadership control to someone else, he's got to find other people that he believes can move at the speed of his mind. So if you've got a better solution, then you got to demonstrate it. If you don't, then guess what? He's still in charge. Okay, and that's really the way it works with whether he's your father or a coworker or whatever, right? I have a personal friend of mine, kind of similar, but a little bit different. And the way he relinquishes control over something is if it's when somebody else comes up with a better idea or recognizes a better way of doing it and citing some other reference from some other example. And I'll tell you, I think Terry's the kind of guy that has absolutely no problem whatsoever. It's not even about admitting he's wrong, because I think he's more open-minded than that. Other people might characterize him that way if they attach too much emotion. But I think Terry's the kind of guy that if some new facts come to light that weren't there yesterday, he'll be the first one to go, holy crap, I didn't know that. And he'll be almost bewildered thinking, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when that happens, he smiles real big.
Soon as someone like him realizes, holy crap, there's some new facts that I just didn't know, and now I know it. And he'll probably quickly quadruple check them. But once he's done that fact-checking business, he's the first one to change a policy, the first one to implement a change before even telling anybody. And it's just the way it is with these people, right? That's why I would actually, in a crisis, like I was telling you at the beginning, I would trust someone like him before someone that's a planner. Because planners, for example, they're excellent. When things are moving along like normal and the status quo and there's like no problems going on and everything's just regular, it's like a regular, normal, average day, let the planners in control, right? Because they're the ones that can follow the rules and the regulations and, you know, make sure the meters are working and just all the machines are fine. But when the crap hits the fan, Terry's got to come into the loop. And Terry will be doing the quick read, thank you very much, on maybe troubleshooting where this, that, and the other thing might be the problem, right? So if people can move at the speed of thought, like Terry's brain, then he's probably going to work really well with them. But if there's resistance, because a planner might be saying something to him like, hey, wait a minute, I thought when we have a problem like this, we have to go to chapter 4.
Right.
It says chapter 4 here, it says, look, it says it has to be in this position. And meanwhile, Terry's probably thinking like, you know, 15 steps ahead and saying, look, buddy, it's not chapter 4, section 3 that's the problem. It's like these other 17 things that are evolving right now, right? And so he's always adapting on the fly, demanding, responding to the demands of the problem. So I bet you some of his best friends, some of the people he works with the best, are exactly like him in the speed of thought department. And that's really how he overcomes this ego thing. But people have to understand, too, how to define temperaments. And this is the problem I've been seeing for years, is a lot of people simply don't understand the language. They think a leader means this, when in fact it means something completely different, right? And there's a whole spectrum of temperaments or behaviors that we just were never taught in school,
right?
Like we were never taught these things.
Well, I'm going to say, man, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. I was kind of like, you know, it was a little bit general at first, and then it started really getting impressive because, you know, my father he's been in construction his whole life, and he has been the foreman of the job his entire life. right? I mean, from go one, he was a foreman because he could think way ahead of everybody. And when I would help him on jobs during the summer, I would look on YouTube and stuff like that. How are we going to hang these doors? Or how are we going to do this, right? And he's already moving with something I've never seen before in my life. And I'm like, Dad, what the hell are you doing? And he'll just be like, look, shut up and get on board. And at the end of it, you'll look at this thing and you go, how the hell did he come up with that?
Exactly. So in a strange kind of way, he doesn't have to give advice per se, because his solutions manifest in real time to meet the demands of the situation, like right now, not tomorrow or next week. And again, the plans are the best laid out documents, because you said he's a foreman, right? So I'm sure he works with people that come with plans and stuff. And he probably knows exactly how to read a plan, and if he had to, and if all the conditions were just perfect, he'd probably build that thing to spec. But if some new situation comes to light, and he knows from his experience that it's going to have to now be modified this way or a little bit changed that way, he just knows from experience that that's the way it's got to play out. And he might not have the, and I say this respectfully because I don't know the man, but he might be, and I also don't know what his emotional temperament is, because I don't know his full name. If I did, I could tell you, right? Because I calculate those things very precisely. But he might appear at times to be maybe impatient.
Do you care if I text that to you off the air? And I'll tell everybody. I'll text you his full name. And because I'm pretty impressed with this. I mean, even the sabbatical thing where you're, and then you said, in fact, I think he's on sabbatical right now. He is on sabbatical right now. He's taking it easy. He's getting away from everything.
Good. Well, he should be. He should just be taking a total break, reading, just kicking back. And don't take anything personal that he might be saying, like right now in his life, because, we all need sabbaticals, right? And a lot of times when people withdraw, if you don't know how to read the signs properly, you might think, oh, he's really, pissed at me, or he's, really upset. If it's a family member, you think that they might hate you or something, because really, all these people want, and we all go through it, I'm telling you, is we need to be by ourselves. Ultimately, that's the best short-term remedy. Just spend quality time by yourself, get rid of all the bullshit and the problems. Sorry, can I say that on the air?
Yes, you can.
It's okay. The idea is to withdraw from what is into the sanctuary of the mind, right? And in the mind is where you become recharged, regenerated. You replenish yourself from the inside out, and that's really where he needs to be right now. And I'm happy you just said that, so that means the guy probably knows himself more than most people then in that regard.
Yeah. Can you check your email? Because I'm not able to send this to you. I'm going to have to do it this way. And, the other thing that you said was I'm about to send it right now. The other thing you said about the ego, it was, and I'm not taking this from a personal level, but when he gets into a fight, especially with anybody about anything political or matters of the heart or what's right and wrong, usually, unless the facts are right in front of him, he's not coming off of it,
Well, exactly. He needs exactly. And like I said, I've known many people personally in my life, and they're I don't want to say they're in love with freedom, but they're attached to the free thinking modality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their ego is actually the first thing to be sacrificed when some new facts come to light that weren't there, minutes ago.
When you said that, it made
me. And I'm not saying
that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. No, they don't. It's not like they're looking to be proven wrong. It's just in a strange kind of way, they might be saying things to themselves like, "Do I have to do all the thinking around here?"
Yeah.
They would love to have some help in that department, but until they meet at least their equal or their match, they're not going to relinquish jack to anybody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just not. You got to demonstrate and prove to them that you're at their level or at their speed of thought.
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't even sign up for the gig. Or if you're going to work with someone like Terry, you're either going to be an expert in your own right, and they're going to recognize, and he'll recognize you, or just take the cues and the guidance from someone like Terry, and just be like a team player. Like take the cues from them for the area of expertise that they're in, especially if they're the ones that are, as you said, the foreman. So the success of a gig or a job or a project, it's gonna be the weight of responsibility is on their head, not yours, right? So they got to call the shots in that regard. So,
well, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Did you send that email?
Yes, I sure did.
Okay, let me just double check that here. All right, let's see. I got.
Now, are you using a calculator, like a gematria calculator? I mean, I don't want to give all.
Well,
this
no, time. I'm actually using a pen and a paper in my mind.
Okay.
Because I've been doing this for so long, and you know, I mean, one name is pretty easy to do, birth date's pretty easy to do, but when I look at a full name, it takes me probably about under a minute. And I'm just doing the kind of a general thing. If I was to really sit down and do it like super in depth, I would be spending minimum an hour going over the calculations and the interpretations. But right now, because we're doing a show, mm-hmm. I'm trying to just cut to the chase and give you like 10% of what I think is going on here with the personality. So just bear with me. I can talk and work at the same time, but I just want to let you know that the bottom line with someone like it, because now I'm actually seeing the full name, I think he's got this other component, which I'm happy to say reinforces everything I've just said. But now it actually gets a little bit more dynamic, and it shows me. Remember, I was telling you about the emotional component.
I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to let you study that. We've been in this 30 minutes. I got to take a break. Just study that.
Okay.
All right. I'm impressed so far. I got a couple of the names, and man, this is pretty impressive. We'll be right back with Chris Gogos from Alchemy World. Okay, and we're back with Chris Gogos, who's been reading my dad's stuff, which he had no idea. You guys are going to have to take my word for this, but he had no idea. I'm just popping names off to him, and this is incredible. So did you study the full name there? Did I give you that?
Yes, I did. Yep.
All right.
Okay, the most obvious thing, I suggested I needed to find out about his emotional proportions, and here I see that he's got quite a handle on the emotional side, and it's of the type that I would usually see in people that are natural consensus builders. And the way I define consensus building is someone who has above average listening skills. They're able to read people emotionally immediately and really find out what people are feeling, not just thinking. And there's a difference. So he is able to also think himself quite well. So when he merges the two, what he thinks and what he feels, that's where his real potency kicks in. So I'll give the guy like quite a bit of marks in the emotional maturity department. Now, interestingly, the one thing that might trip him up, and I say this respectfully because I don't know the man, is he might be preoccupied with managing details. So if he appears like he's a little bit overboard at times in the details department, cut him some slack, because he probably knows himself better than you might think. I've met a lot of people in my life that have an overly organized side to them. They might seem a little too bent on being overly controlling, but that's their way of staying on top of details, because they know that if something is going to screw them up, it won't be a big thing. It'll be some stupid little detail that's not updated, or it's missing, or a piece of paper is missing with some date on it, or a telephone number, or a measurement, just some stupid piece of trivial data that most people would not even care about, he will, and it'll screw him up if he's not on top of it. So if he seems a little bit overboard sometimes when he's trying to control stuff, it's because he probably knows himself. The other potential thing that might weigh him down from time to time is how he defines relationship responsibilities, whether it's intimate or platonic, the family or friends or coworkers. In a strange kind of way, he probably feels a lot of pressure trying to live up to the expectations of being there for everybody. And now I feel like a lawyer that I'm coming to his defense. And if he listens to this, what I would say to him, and it might sound kind of funny the way I'm saying it, but I would say, hey, listen, be there for people. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. I don't know. It started echoing.
We have a storm here, and there's thunder and lightning, and I think that had something to do with it.
Okay. Yeah, it started echoing real bad, and I was thinking, oh, hell, what's happening, right?
Right. Well, I don't know exactly, but I do know that, like I said, that there's major thunder and lightning and rain now, so I guess it's par for the course. You never know. All the anomalies with weather and whatnot, the effect on tech, so... So did you want me to continue, or?
Well, hold on just a second. We're off the air right now. I'm going to put us back on. I had to get off the air to fix it.
But
I got the station running. It's all good. That's the beauty of having the live radio station. You can just turn the music on, you know?
Yeah, excellent.
Let's see.
Yeah, I was hearing an echo myself, actually, but I just was talking through it. So.
All right, we're back. Sorry about that, folks. That was a little rough. Yeah, unfortunately, we're having to use the Google Voice line tonight because he had some issues with his Skype, but that's all right. If you guys, you can still message me or email me. But yeah, you can go on ahead with the reading for the...
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, I was, I think before we got cut off, I was focusing... I was chuckling to myself because I'm thinking, okay, if I was Terry's lawyer and I was defending him, if people accuse him of this, that, and the other thing, I would say, listen, in the category which I call public image or the expectations that people have of Terry on first impressions, they expect him to be a selfless individual initially where he puts the needs of others ahead of his own interests, and that's cool. That's okay. That's noble. That's a good... nice temperament to have. It'll teach Terry some compassion over his lifetime, and that's totally okay and cool. However, it's not cool if people overstep their boundaries and start pushing and imposing problems on him that aren't his and try to force him to make them his, that kind of thing. And I would actually
kind of like
say
I do
that,
huh? That's exactly what I do to him, and
isn't that funny? Okay, well, but see, I would say whether it's a family or a professional thing, Terry's got to learn to mitigate or neutralize that kind of behavior for his own sanity and for his own spiritual health. Mm-hmm. Because if that is left unchecked, Terry's going to start to develop what I call issues of remorse and regret, and thinking all kinds of stupid and silly things that got nothing to do with him, right? And I'll give you an example. If you see him, and I say this respectfully because, like I said, I don't know the man, right? Really, I don't know anything about him.
Sure.
But if he starts moping around and looking kind of like down and kind of sad or depressed and stuff, I'll bet you 90% of the time it's got nothing to do with him. It's him carrying the burdens and the weight of all the things he's trying to live up to. So you got to cut the guy some slack, or people like him, and don't put so much heavy responsibility on him. He'll take it, right? But he doesn't have to, is what I'm saying. He's got a choice. And I think in his best way of behaving, that's the most healthiest form, where he's firing on all cylinders and he's contributing more to the team or the group dynamic, whether it's work-wise or relationships or with his friends or whatever. It's when he's actually helping people by being a good listener and being this consensus taker and builder. Okay, even though, as I said before I knew his full name, I was suggesting that he has a very powerful capacity to think, and I still stand by that. But remember, I told you I didn't know what kind of emotional weight he had in the personality. Now I'm seeing that he's got really good emotional traits, and he's got them in some pretty powerful spots. So I would say if him and I worked together, for example, okay, because I know myself, and if I thought I knew Terry and we were like actual colleagues, like work-wise, where we had vested interests to see things actually work and function and there's no politics or nonsense, I would actually say to him, hey, Terry, listen, we got to be speaking with the suppliers and the staff. We got to make some changes, but we got to get so-and-so online or the project's not going to move forward. And this other person's probably going to resist this change because they're the planner and they want things to go according to plan A, not plan X,
yeah.
Right, when the crap hits the fan. So I'd say to Terry, hey, listen, how about you chair the meeting? Okay, you ask the basic fundamental questions that you know need to be asked because you got Mr. Facts Updated Guy going on in your mind, so you know how to kind of phrase the questions in a way where everyone will know that, uh-oh, there's some new facts that came to light, because that's the only time Terry, you know, opens his mouth and actually insists that we have to listen to him. Well, I'd let Terry chair the meeting, ask the tough questions, and then I'd say to Terry, then I'll take notes. Okay, you just ask the tough questions, and then I'll take notes, and then after the meeting, you and I'll have a meeting, and then you tell me who you think is going to go along with the new updated revisions and who's going to be having problems with it. And then I'll work with Terry on whatever he comes up with, because I would trust his capacity to be the consensus assessor. You know what I'm saying? Like, he would know emotionally who's going to come on side and who's going to be a pain, who's not going to, you know, work with the new plan or whatever. Because the
so
emotional
do you consider this like an esoteric?
That I believe he has is in a good spot, and he would be able to do that well.
Right. Do you consider this an esoteric art, or do you really believe that it's a science?
Well, I use the scientific method. For years I've been doing the esoteric calculations, so it's really a combo of both. And I go back to Pythagoras again. He's the guy that actually, I guess, did the grunt work and put in the seat time on the front end way, way back to try to teach a bunch of people how to do this. But I think he was kind of having a very difficult time because, you know, the esoteric part of it is only because it's obscure. You know what I'm saying? It's a very obscure kind of thing. It's like being a musician, and yeah, you can learn your scales and you can learn the difference between major and minor, but until you sit your ass down and put in the seat time to practice and to hear all the variations yourself and to maybe learn a bunch of songs yourself and maybe to play with other people, you're never going to kind of figure out the subtleties, the nuances, to the point where you can sound like an expert at something. And I always find that the esoteric label for anything is just a kind of like a funny way to say, look, you could learn this kind of thing too, but you have to put in the seat time to figure it out. And until you do that, it's all esoteric.
Well, what I mean is where do you think that Pythagoras got this from as far as why it would work? I mean, you know, it has to have some kind of reasoning to it. I mean, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think what he did, like I tell you, I think he was already probably cut from the cloth of an investigator, you know, kind of like a detective, a minded person, where he had questions and said, no, this can't be true. And he had to figure it out and do tests just like anybody. Trying to figure something out to find out what the truth is. But I think at the time when he was, I guess, of the age where he was learning stuff like a kid or a student, he was in Egypt and he learned about hieroglyphics. And I think the Egyptians had this kind of mentality back then that they would acquire a technique or a science of something, and they'd master it, like they'd nail it down, right? And then they would also teach it to the initiated or to the people that they handpicked that they believed had the temperament or the capacity to actually get it, whatever it was, whatever they were being taught. And I still think that's really how he acquired the knowledge at the beginning. And let's keep one thing in mind too, right? I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that happen in ancient Egypt. Like I learned this a few years back, but you remember Alexander the Great, right?
Sure.
Well, he had a general called Ptolemy, and when the Macedonian Empire was divided after Alexander's death, Ptolemy, who's a general, he was like a commander, one of the trusted generals that owed his allegiance to King Philip, who was Alexander's father, okay? So when the kingdom or the empire was divided, Ptolemy said, you know what, I'm going to just go and manage Egypt. So he took all of Egypt as his personal property. And so when he went there, okay, he wound up being received by the locals because it was in complete disarray. I think the Persians had just, like, destroyed them, and, you know, there was other problems. And it was just a destroyed piece of geography, right? So when the Macedonians showed up with Ptolemy, General Ptolemy, they thought that he was going to finish them off and just, like, completely, like, destroy them more. But instead, what he did is he looked around, and I guess his entourage or his other, you know, military people at the time, they really respected knowledge, okay?
Right.
And what he did is he said, you know what? Let's keep everything the way it is and make it better. And he started a program, and it was probably also due in part to if there was something like a will in Alexander the Great's, I guess, last will and testament, it was that Egypt was going to become the new birthplace or the repository of knowledge of the then known world, right?
Or specifically and, Alexandrian Egypt?
Yeah, like the library in Alexandria. That's
right.
Exactly. That's how most people know of the ancient importance of Alexandria and the library and stuff. But it was because Alexander himself, even though he was like a military guy, and so was his father, and the whole clan and the tribe were like that, they weren't really into conquering for the sake of conquering, is my understanding. It was because they wanted there to be something akin to like a brotherhood, you know what I mean, of humanity? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there was, if I remember it right, and I'm not a big history buff, but he was going through conquering the world to create what they called a new world, what a lot of people would be afraid of right now, the New World Order. But, it, you know, the funny thing about Alexander the Great is everybody that he conquered ended up worshiping and fighting for this man. They didn't rebel.
That's because he had a tolerant policy about stuff, right? He just wanted order, and the kind of order wasn't like a despotic type of thing. He would go into your area, and what he would do as a sign of respect, he would know the customs of the local area, and he would come and worship your god. He wouldn't say, you're going to worship my
god. That's right.
God.
Yeah, that's right.
He'd say, take me to your temple, right? And he'd stop killing, like, right at that time, and he would just say, take me to your main temple, and he would go and do an offering, and he would follow the customs of the area, right? And then he would actually give the local, I guess, priesthood or the chieftains or whoever was kind of left there, he'd give them resources to rebuild, and he would take care of families. It was just not what most people think. Like, okay, if you were a soldier and you resisted and you didn't like the terms of what he was doing, then he would fight you, right? And you would fight him and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line was,
he had a vision of organizing stuff,
but it was the knowledge, the information. And to tie it into the Pythagoras thing again, General Ptolemy, when he replenished the coffers of the priesthood of ancient Egypt, he said, listen, let's just rebuild everything and let's just continue what you guys had already started. Because obviously you guys were onto something about this knowledge and information. And really, that was kind of the context, I think, that Pythagoras kind of benefited from, or people like him. In fact, if I'm understanding ancient history correctly, that whole area was pretty much a safe zone for smart people.
Right.
So philosophers, if you were somebody of the book, as I think they referred to it, you could go there and they would take care of you. Like, they really would, but you'd have to be able to demonstrate your expertise or your knowledge and whatnot. And they loved information. Now, mind you, it wasn't all accurate and stuff. There was a lot of research and development going on and whatnot, but at least it was supporting knowledge.
Yeah. I got another one for you here from a listener. I think I know who this is, but it's, yeah, it is who I think it is. Okay. It's, the name's Jordan. Some of you guys know who this is.
Okay, what,
J-O-R-D-A-N.
A-N, okay, J-O-R-D-A-N, yep. First name Jordan, and the birth date?
November the 20th, 1981.
Okay. All right, well, right off the top, I would say, and this is, again, just a little sample, okay? It's by no means a definitive version. I think Jordan, in a crisis, or when there's a something that would be testing him, okay? And usually I define a crisis as when you're going about your business and all of a sudden, you know, the crap hits the fan and there's like danger and it's just all of a sudden you're on high alert. I think Jordan's the kind of individual that would immediately be thinking about the danger and its impact on loved ones or people that are close to Jordan. And Jordan would probably, I don't want to say sacrifice himself for the team or for others, but if I was a betting person, and I'm not, I like to calculate things more, so I would say Jordan would probably, I don't want to even dramatize and say really nasty, bad things would happen to Jordan, but he actually would care, right, and be able to demonstrate it with the ones he deems to be loved ones or close people. And that's cool, that's okay. But what I would also suggest that the Jordan do, for Jordan's sake, is to be very careful who he deems to be worthy of emotional closeness with, right? Because I don't know Jordan's full name, but I also see these two other patterns that are pretty reinforced here that tell me that on an emotional level, Jordan can get pretty deep.
Well, right? I say
you
got to
be you got to be very real with Jordan, or Jordan's going to think you're full of crap.
Yeah,
and not mm-hmm. and like he'll be able to assess your actual sincerity pretty quick.
Sure.
And for example, in a team environment, kind of similar to Terry, but I would actually I would also pull Jordan into these meetings. Just to go back to your dad's example I gave earlier, and I would suggest that Jordan and Terry are the ones that are the emotional bullshit detectors on the team, right? That would know if somebody's just a good con artist, like trying to fluff their way through on a feeling level, because they'd be able to discern that, whereas people that are not as astute would probably be convinced of something when in actuality they're just being conned, you know? Because let's face it, I mean, I know some people in my own life that if I was somebody else, I would actually believe their sincerity, but I know not to trust them, so I don't. Do you know the difference of what I'm talking about? Like, they're yeah. really good at making you believe that they actually care, when in fact they don't give a crap about you or anybody at all.
Listen, I don't want you to send us a bill or anything, but I did I did email you his full name. That'll be the last full name one, I'm pretty sure, that I ask you about. But
well, here, hold on. Okay, you're going to email me that. Well, I'm not finished with Jordan, because I'm still,
got
one other important thing to just get across here. Is that okay? Can I just
Absolutely.
Continue for a sec? Okay. Since Jordan's last birthday, because again, you know, November goes later in the calendar year, right? So what I'm going to say now will probably have more of an influence going into the fall, I guess, or the autumn period. But if I would have known Jordan, say, last birthday, like last November, and if I was doing a forecast going into the next, say, 12, 13 months, I would have said, hey, Jordan, it's okay to be idealistic with regards to romantic matters, okay? Because, you know, we need to relate to people on a tender level if it's a significant other, this kind of thing. But at the same time, I would also suggest to Jordan that idealism can be a great thing, but it can be an earth-shattering thing when one expects the idealism, for example, in a relationship to continue after the honeymoon period. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jordan had to learn, and probably still is learning, the value of idealism evolved, right? So if it, what I'm saying doesn't pertain to, say, a relationship, then Jordan maybe has to evolve some ideals that he's had about something and get ready to make them more practical as opposed to just keeping the rose-colored glasses on, you know what I'm saying, and seeing a version A of what he thinks reality is and with regards to something, and then he will get the benefit of both trends kind of in one shot. So it's good to have ideals. It's kind of like fuel that keeps us going, right? It keeps us motivated, and we have to have them. But in Jordan's case, I believe he's probably been more preoccupied trying to maybe define or get in touch with what his ideals are. And now it's time to put a bit more spit and polish on it and bend them into shape to make them more practical. That's really the trend line moving forward into the fall, moving forward, that he ought to be paying more attention to.
Now, is this relationship specific? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it could be relationships, or it could just be something that Jordan has idealized in his life. It could be a career path. It could be a business idea. There's many ways that people apply their idealism, right? So if I looked at the full name, I could probably calculate a little bit more depth and maybe what that might be. But just on the surface, with the little that I know of Jordan and the birth date, I'll just stick to what I just said. Like, whatever he's got going on, it's got to transform or evolve from purely idealistic zone to practical zone, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the best way I can describe it.
It sounds like you're holding back, like you don't want to say something, right?
Well, I don't want to say something if I don't know his full name.
Right, right.
Over and above the birth date, right?
Because
it's like you're, okay, I'm just saying, like, I'm kind of, you draw a parallel here.
Sure.
That's like me being a criminal investigator, okay? You're giving me a couple of clues, and you're saying, okay, solve the case. And I'm going,
right.
Okay, I'd love to, but...
Right.
You know, a little bit more data to go on, or I need two more weeks, right?
Well, he's messaged me on here, and he's flipping out, right?
Flipping out, okay.
Yeah, he can't believe what you're saying, and he said, go ahead and email him my full name, and I did. I'm not going to give it out over the air.
And, okay, cool. So he gave you permission, so that's cool, because I need that, right? So...
Yeah, and I'm going to say, man, like, if somebody, while you're looking that up, you know, somebody, I mean, do you, how many clients do you have now? I mean, is this something you're doing that's new, or?
No, I've been doing this for years. I took a break. I took a sabbatical. I took my own advice, my own suggestion, quite a few years ago, and, I mean, I got about 2,500 clients, right?
Damn.
Over the years that I'm okay with servicing on a year to year, every 3 years. Some people it's every 4 years. I started a what I call an audiocast newsletter, which is a 7-day forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that every week. I publish it, release it on Sundays, And that is a subscription-based service. And it's actually quite cost-effective. It's $8 to sign up, and then it's $1 every week. It's through PayPal, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want. But the audio cast that I do, which is the forecast, mm-hmm. 7 days ahead, like a weather forecast, I give people information that they can use immediately in real time in their lives, regardless of whether they're happy, sad, rich, poor, single, married, having a job, don't have a job. And I give them this very intense overview of temperament trends. It's like I'm reading the thermometer every day, and I'm telling them, look, there's a heavy emotional period today coupled with this impact that's going to try to screw up your optimism if you're not careful, and you might want to run away from your problems, but the best thing to do is this, 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 and this. And it works out great because it's putting the onus on the individual to really think hard about their own personality. And I'm all about teaching people how to know their behaviors. I force them to actually pay attention to their behaviors and to get them to admit to themselves. They don't have to admit anything to me or anybody else with the audio cast. I want them to understand that you're going to fall into one of three camps. Your behaviors are either going to be like assets, right, which will build on themselves, or they're going to be like liabilities that will subtract from your assets. And the difference between assets and liabilities is equity. And the equity is like savings. You know, you want to just squirrel that away in the bank account of your behavior and treat them as reserves, you know, where you don't really want to dip into them at all. But you're going to have to wake up tomorrow and work at your life, whatever you're doing, again anyway. So you might as well have a heads up and know what your strengths of character are. And that's the hand you're going to play every day. You're not going to be bringing the half-assed version of yourself to your job or the half-assed version of yourself to your relationship. That's stupid. So right? Like, if you knew better, would you do that? Of course you wouldn't.
Right.
Right. You'd always want to be putting the best of yourself out there for everything. And that's, sorry for going off on a tangent here, but I get really, it's a real hot button for me when I see people being defeating themselves, right? And then they don't know why. And then once they realize that they are taking themselves for granted in a particular area in their personality, and I show them, look, this is a strength of character, and you got to be behaving this way like all the time, not just like once in a blue moon. Then when they finally get it and they start consciously expressing and behaving a particular temperament more than other ones, then they start seeing like this amazing change in their life. And that's when I can kind of back off and not be so, you know, intense with them. And then they're good to go. Then they don't need me anymore. And I'm so okay with that. Right. So, but anyway, let me focus on Jordan here for a second. Okay. Cause, there's only one of me here. And I need to.
Yeah, man, we can attempt a break. I probably need to do a break again, anyways, man. I've got.
Oh,
to,
perfect. Okay.
And that way you can. Study
okay, we're gonna do
doing,
that now.
Man. Yeah,
or
I'm just man. I've got a head full of questions here, you know, and I'm trying to think of them all because it's. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, man. It's pretty impressive. I'm pretty impressed.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that you're letting me kind of. Keep the format a little bit open because I'm talking to you like I would talk to one of my buddies up here, okay?
When right.
He's saying, hey, look, you know, my girlfriend's giving me a hard time and she said that, you know, if you can do the name analysis, so, you know, maybe you can help us out. So I'm just keeping it that kind of casual and informal, right? It's easier to,
right.
All right,
we're going to finish this reading of Jordan when we get back here in just a few moments, folks. Whole thing, you would definitely have to get your own reading on this, or at least know somebody, because the goosebumps are rising. You know, it's pretty cool. And If you guys want to check out the website, go to lightingthevoid.com. You can become a light worker, sign up to the newsletter there, subscribe, and you will get access to our new upcoming esoteric library, as well as a lot of beginner books on some of this stuff that we talk about now, and, you know, some special favors and stuff. So Chris is, Gogos is here with us from alchemyworld.com. If you're just tuning in, and he has been reading a friend of mine, and I've given a little bit more of the name about it, and this is what he does. He helps people using an ancient form. I believe it's called gematria. Is that right, Chris?
That's correct, but I add the word English in front of that because okay. It's the English language that I use to do the gematria. And that gematria, too, it's kind of like an old version of saying geometry. But because there's math involved, there's measurements, et cetera. So English gematria is the correct technical phrase.
Yep. So what'd you come up with there with Mr. Jordan?
Okay. Well, with Jordan, here's the, I think, on a motivational level, which is the intrinsic version of Jordan from the inside out. This is the fuel that gets him going each and every day. I actually think he has a quite the, I don't want to say clairvoyant, but I actually would, but it usually gets activated when he's well rested. He's not the guy to be pushing at night. So, okay, I know it's nighttime right now and he's up and whatnot, but I think he's the type of guy that should actually have a very strict sleep regimen where he goes to bed at a reasonable time and, you know, doesn't make any major decisions where he's doing this, that, or the other thing at nighttime. So that's the first thing right off the top, I would say. Otherwise, he might have disturbed sleep patterns, which wouldn't be a good thing. So he should have that, you know, that old saying of let me sleep on it and I'll get back to you tomorrow.
Right.
He should be saying that like all the time to everybody and to also get back to people tomorrow or the day after and to only make decisions in the light of day because that's when he's probably at his best and he can follow through on decisions that he makes after he's had a chance to sleep literally on it, right? And he also has the gift of being tied into his subconscious mind. So if he actually gives himself problems to solve or think about as he drops off to sleep, he might be the kind of guy that can actually wake up in the morning and have a pretty good understanding of what it might take to actually solve a problem.
Wow.
Right? Because he has the thing about sleeping on it. Because that cliche, like cliches come from somewhere, right? And this is one that I actually think applies to him. Now, when I drill down and I look a little bit in a few other areas, I would say in his methodologies category, which is, as I said earlier, remember I made that that statement or that comment that people take certain things for granted about themselves. Well, here's the category or the temperament that I think he might take for granted about himself, and I'm going to remind him that what I'm about to say is not applicable to just anybody as a general statement, okay? So the best sum total version that he brings to anything, even on a down day where he's not firing necessarily on all cylinders or he might not be into doing this or into doing that, I would still trust him with the following thing, and it's this. At its most basic level, I think he is an excellent improviser and adapter to things. I would say he probably can find new ways to do the same old things that would just blow my mind like all the time. Like he'd always be teaching me a thing or two about doing something different and still coming out with a solution or some adaptable way of doing something, whereas I might want to do something the same old way every day, he would say, geez, Chris, don't you get bored out of your freaking mind doing it the same way? I could show you 15 different ways to do that thing. Okay, so that's where he could teach people about versatility and adaptability. Now, that's on an intermediate level, but he can do that really well. At its highest level, I think he's got a component where he is really good at managing extremely tense situations. Like, okay, let me give you an example. If we played on a sports team together, our team might be down. We're running. We're looking at the clock. It looks like we're going to lose, okay? But not to Jordan. Jordan might be sizing this up and sizing that up and just working out the odds in his mind about this, that, trying to find the weak spots in the opponents. And so he's not a quitter in that regard, right? And in fact, I would say he would be the guy that would probably pull it all together when it looks like all is about to fail. But the way to support someone like Jordan is to give him the support he needs, especially when other people are almost giving up, right? And it's kind of a weird dynamic, but he has what it takes to manage and to grasp defeat out of the jaws of your enemy or your adversary. Do you know what I'm saying? So if people just saw that in him from time to time, I bet you that spark of genius would just blossom every now and then. And he could show people that, hey, look, okay, we could lose, and if we do, we'll be back at the fight tomorrow and to, you know, give everybody an upbeat spin on something. But he could also be the guy that shows people that it ain't over till it's over, until all options are exhausted. Do you know what I'm saying? And he'd be the last guy still working on the options when everybody else is like, you know, going, oh, it's over, or we can't do it. So anyway, I'm dramatizing again. I'm just trying to show you that he's definitely an adapter, improviser, and very, very versatile. There's more I could say too, but I just wanted to hit on that one main thing.
What about the big one there? What is he here to overcome?
What he's here? Well, interestingly, the way you just put it to me, because
that's the big one to me.
Hit the nail on the head, and I'm going to tie it into the way I described your father. Okay, your father has the capacity to be a speed of thought kind of a guy. Well, you know what? So does Jordan. But Jordan might not believe it because, see, a lot of people with his kind of combination might be, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, but I could easily see someone like Jordan as a kid being diagnosed with having attention deficit disorder. And I say that respectfully, Jordan. You don't know me, I don't know you, but I'm just saying, like, I've seen people mislabeled in this regard, right? And he's got to learn to overcome, first of all, definitions that might be imposed on him by the outside world. And if he's capable of managing his own boredom, then he will be rising above this label, and he could teach people a thing or two. See, because a lot of times, like I told you, plans are good when they work out. But when they don't work out, you need people like Jordan, like your dad, that can find workarounds, that can find new ways to do the same old things. And sure, to just rise above that kind of situation. So he needs to learn to embrace the generalist stigma. Right? Like I told you, that old saying of jack of all trades, you know, master of none. Well, I flip it around and I go, you know what? Sometimes it is better to be a generalist than a specialist. And I would actually encourage Jordan to learn all kinds of stuff from generalists that are experts in a field. Like if Jordan, if all he did every day, or, you know, a good portion of the day or week was, okay, you know how in those magazines like Time or The Economist, if those are the kinds of things that Jordan was reading, where he'd read a paragraph or two about what the smartest astrophysicists are saying, or the smartest auto mechanics are saying, or the smartest whatever are saying about topic X, Jordan would become not only a brainiac, but in his own way, by being a generalist, he would be able to take all that information and apply it to all kinds of problems that haven't even been brought up yet, right? And they'd just be stored in his mind like RAM, like, you know, like memory, right? Waiting to be used for some real life problem. And that's what a lot of people don't get with this kind of temperament. They actually think that there's something wrong with them because they can't focus on something like, you know, 4-year diploma or a 4-year degree in something. And that's, there's an inconvenience to all behaviors. And that's the inconvenience with his, is that he might not have the longevity to study something for a long time without a lot of effort. He could, but he's more in his glory and more in his element when he retreats into the mind and learns to go short with everything, right? Where The only, okay, if we worked in a team environment, like in a business or in the office or whatever, the only time I would really require his services is the example of, you know, when the crap hits the fan and there's like a serious problem that I can't solve because I'm not like him. But as long as I'm honest with him and I give him all the details and I say, Jordan, I really screwed up with this, you know, shipment to client X, and I don't even know where to begin to solve this problem. I got a meeting I got to go to, and the client's freaking out, and they need an answer by like 1 o'clock, or we're going to lose the account. If I was honest and gave Jordan all the bits and pieces of all the details, Jordan would figure it out. He would figure it out and fix the damn problem. And he would get back to me and say, oh, Chris, it was just a typo on the stupid label, and UPS got it wrong, and we didn't even send it to UPS. It actually was sent out by FedEx, and it's stuck in customs. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. He signed all that stuff out without freaking out, whereas I would be freaking out. Do you see the difference?
Sure. Yeah, I do.
But anyway, I could go on and on with Jordan, but I think Jordan's got a pretty dynamic chart, but it's equally split almost between the emotional realm and the mental realm, right? So he can think and feel his way through things. The only thing that'll trip him up is the mismanagement of details. It's exactly the same one that might trip up your dad, right? It's interesting. But he's got more of a scrappy, feisty side to him that he needs to embrace a little more to get stuff done. And he's got a lot of leadership in him, but ironically, he's probably, and I say this respectfully, Jordan, you're probably going to mistrust your own opinion, or he's probably going to mistrust his own opinion all kinds of reasons, baggage-wise, that he's inherited.
Right.
I don't even want to go down that road. But
this man, Jordan, that you're talking about is a very good friend of mine, and I hope he calls in. It might be a little hard since we switched, you know, instead of using Skype, we switched, but the thing about him is everything you're saying is right. He would come up, like when I had a problem, he could come up, and I'm talking about down in the darkness type problem, dude, he was in my life when I was down in the darkness, you know, when you're in a hole and it just looks like there's no way out. And this dude would come up with things that I never thought about, you know, positive sides, not just say, hey, dude, be positive, but I'm talking about real solutions to the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm. Adapted right on the fly, like on the spot with the situation that is, not what isn't. It's like the more he knows about a problem, the more of an asset he becomes.
Yes.
And right? That's why you can't lie to him, and you can't have ego when you interact with him. You just got to be real, and then he'll be all over the problem.
Yeah, that's why we became friends, too.
Way.
Because a lot of people in my real world consider me, you know, a bit of a butthead, you know. But I'm that way, too. Like, I can smell it before it comes, you know. I can tell you what your agenda is in about five minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. And with me and him, I mean, we were both real with each other, and it just kind of clicked. And the second thing that, you know, a lot of this stuff is general, but it's general specific. So if you guys are listening, it may be hard to say, oh, well, you know, but if you're that person he's talking about, you're going to know exactly what he's talking about because you're going to hit highlights, right? So like when you said about a crisis situation, this dude is death-defying afraid of tornadoes, and anytime we have even a tornado warning, he's gathering his family up and he's trying to find the safest place to go, and he's going there until it passes, you know. That's what
right,
he does.
Okay, good, cool, okay.
And I used to laugh
he's not thinking he's gonna cheat death by confronting the tornado. He's thinking, no, this is a really real threat here, and I'm not gonna, you know, screw around here. I gotta like act now. And
yeah.
I get you. Yeah, okay, cool. Okay, so he's got that response, knowing how to manage emergencies in that regard, and the family thing, you alluded to that. And again, just to let you know that there's a lot of people, when there's a crisis, if the calculation was different, they wouldn't give a crap about you, me, their family even, and they would just be hightailing it out of there on their own.
Yeah. Yeah,
I've seen it. I've literally seen it with my own eyes.
Yeah, you can't believe
tornado,
it. Right?
up here a few years ago, and I watched some guy just not give a crap about the kids that were with us, or the elderly people that were with us, or the dogs that were with us. They just split. They just took off, and this was a single person. right? No family or friends. And I'm thinking, you're an adult here. You could have contributed to the solution, but the guy just took off, right? And it was a stark little, reminder again that people behave according to their natural inclinations, and I just see proof of it all the time.
Yeah, and those are some of the traits that I would really like to get to have from him, because what you were saying was kind of spot on about him too. And he'll come up with an idea or a thought or something that, you know, he maybe think, you know, he'll get in his mind about something cool or new or maybe a philosophic idea. And at the end of all his statements, I'm sitting there going, wow, that you're right. But then at the end of his statements, he'll question himself. He'll be like, or maybe, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. And you're saying
that shows humility, right? And that means that he's not so hoity-toity, high-minded, thinking he's better than everybody. Because I told you, people that have a command or operate well in the mental realm, they're the first ones to change their mind, as the cliche goes, when some new facts come to light that are truer than the ones that they thought were true 5 minutes ago. Right? And to me, that's a sign of intellectual maturity, and I've witnessed that with colleagues that I've worked with and just even strangers that I've met on work sites, like when I go into the do corporate stuff, and I've just seen it, and they've openly admitted it to me, right? They're not doggedly holding on to a particular point of view, and they're going to fight for it in the meeting with outdated facts. And they look at me, they go, no, absolutely not, hell no. If somebody tables some new research that challenges my facts that I had like 2 weeks ago that I thought were current, I'll be the first one to go, geez, look at that. Okay, I thought I was up to date. Well, obviously I've been told, right? And there's no ego attached to that, right? Because do you not want to make correct assessments?
Oh, great. All right, we're going to have to try to call him back again. I think he's having a storm out there. We're going to cut into break, okay, folks? We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Man, I don't know what the heck's going on with that. I'm sorry.
Well, I can tell you, we got lightning and thunder, rain stuff going on here, and the power went off to the house. And
is that what happened?
Power just came back on, so...
Let me check the settings on this real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why, dude, don't worry about it either, man, because, I mean, most of the people are going to listen to the podcast anyways, and I'll edit it to make it sound really awesome.
Oh, that's cool, but I'm serious, like, the lightning and the thunder was quite intense here, so I think our generator, our transformer station down the concession road away from me. But anyway, it's really good when it does go out. It comes on pretty quick most of the time. Right. I live on a hill, and then there's a valley, and we just get punished here with the weather. It gets pretty extreme. So,
okay, well, yeah, let me get back on the air here, man. That was rough.
Okay.
Let's see if it'll... All right, here we go. Sorry, we lost. He's in a lightning storm, folks, so we lost him again. I mean, I got to commend you for sticking with us through this, man. Most people just be like, forget it, you know, and just hang up, right?
Oh, geez. No, this was, you know what, technology is what it is. I'm just really happy when it actually does work, that it's really cool. And when it doesn't work, well, we got to try it again, right? So it worked again, so that's good. So where were we? Was I still talking about Jordan?
Yeah, he wanted to say that when you said something to him about, you know, when you mentioned his birthday and about romance and something about him being practical, really hit
idealism
home.
To practical, yep.
So, yeah, he wanted to thank you for that. He said that really hit home. Of course, he would like more, you know, specific, but you know what? I mean, that's pretty specific. It impressed him a lot, you know.
Good. Well, I was glad to do it. And again, there's more. See, when I'm looking at this schematic here, okay, out of 100%, because Jordan gave me permission through you to talk freely about it, all the stuff I mentioned is still about, like, at this point, probably around, I don't know, 10, 15, 20% tops. There's another 80% that I could drill down and talk more about. But it goes more into the realm of the liabilities part. You know, remember I was talking about assets versus liabilities?
Right.
Because we all got bills to pay, behaviorally speaking. I know it sounds kind of corny the way I'm saying it, but there's no other way to describe it. And usually it comes out as manifests as quirky, idiosyncratic behaviors. But Shakespeare would always do it more justice. We called it character flaws, you know, like the irony in a story. I mean, that's where I think Shakespeare was like the absolute best at doing that. If you stuck with his stories and you could really, you know, understand them, it was the tragic irony that happened in people's lives. Well, guess what? We got tragic irony going on in our lives, everybody. And I think part of the experiment of living is to identify what those character flaws are in our behavior and to say, you know what, I'm not going to let those defeat me. I'm going to figure them out, and I'm going to correct those behaviors. Technically, I'll find out what they are, I'm going to correct them, and I'm going to balance them out. Because that's the equivalent of not wanting to carry a mortgage anymore or carry a balance on a Visa bill. You're going to pay that sucker off in full with interest and be done with it. Now, you might go rack up some debt somewhere else and go buy a bunch of other stuff, something else, but the old behavior that was working against you, no, you're not going to let that continue because now you know better. You know what the truth is. And it's very difficult to unlearn the truth once you see evidence that it's doing good for you, like it's going to benefit you, right. So anyway, I went off on a tangent again, sorry about that, but
no man, it's,
I just wanted to get that point across.
That's perfectly okay. So do you think that this stuff, you know, when you talk about gematria, I know a little bit about, you know, Hebrew gematria, right? Not so much English gematria, but it seems like the Library of Alexandria, if you know, like tomorrow night I'm going to have Jeff Harmon on, and if you guys ever, I don't know if you've ever listened to him on any of the shows he's been on, but he uses like old ancient astrology, and his stuff's super accurate, and he's got a ton of clients. So it makes you think, man, like, what else was in that library? You know, what was actually in that library? What are we missing out on?
I think it was like the original Google, except without all the ads, you know. It was like information par excellence, right? It was like the best of repository of knowledge of the day. And mind you, there was a lot of fluff and a lot of, you know, stuff that probably was not usable, but there was an effort made to collect it anyway. Apparently, during the time, again, of General Ptolemy, one of Alexander the Great's generals, the guy that kind of was managing the whole thing, he had a policy that if a ship went to port through Alexandria, like through his neck of the woods, like through his territory, it was like a law, like a federal law, that the ship's captain had to allow his ship to be boarded, I guess, by customs agents at the time, like from the Macedonian army and stuff. And he had to give over all the knowledge of what he had acquired on his journey, and they would pay him money. They wouldn't just take it. They would give him, like, they'd recompense him, and they would literally copy the information and give him back his books or his things, and then they would take those copies and put them in the library. Because you got to keep things in context, right? If a captain of a ship who was charged with the responsibility of moving goods and goods around from, you know, one port to another, everybody in the area, like in a strange kind of way, they shared information, right? Because it was like the old version of doing business. And that's how they built their information database back then. It was the captains of the ships and all the other smart people that knew something, they would go there and just contribute to the repository. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they would just be like doing it willingly, and it was a safe zone for smart people, right? So I think that's the way that knowledge base was built back then.
Right. Man, this is just amazing. So if somebody, the services you provide, you do the audio cast, right? So that audio cast is it's not specific, or do you just, I mean, how can you give a specific reading to everybody that's listening, or is it something that you give to each individual person?
Excellent question. Okay. If people go to alchemyworld.com. My site is very simple. It's like ridiculously simple to navigate because I only got like four or five links on the index page, like on the front page. They could read about the products that you're asking about by clicking on the products link. And what you'll see, you got to scroll down. There's only two products. There's the AudioCast, and then there's the executive profile. And the executive profile, which is the second one, that's the custom profile. And that's the one where I drill down and look at the name and the birth date, and I do a custom MP3 recording for the person. And I cover off, I know I say like there's 10 categories that I cover, but there's actually way more. And I stick to the 10 categories so I don't overwhelm people with content. But what I've had over the years happen, it's about an hour long, intense analysis where I'm basically going through all the information. I send them the MP3, and I want the client to review the information many times because it's like watching a movie. You pull out new information every time you listen to it, and I encourage people to do their own transcription because a lot of times people add their own notes
sure.
because they find examples of what I'm saying and they can stop the recording and go, oh my God, you know, like, because I pose questions to people too, right? I'm not just telling them, you know, this is hard and fast what's going on in your personality. Because do you remember like in Star Trek, there's the prime directive? It's a fine line. You want to help people, but you don't want to meddle. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to get in there and just take away their free will, because that's wrong. And I know the difference, and people have tried to draw me in the past. They've tried to draw me into their lives to make decisions for them, and it's very difficult. It's a fine line that I'm always kind of always seeing there. I'm very conscious of it. So I, in the executive profile, that's why I have to do it remotely and detached. Before, I used to connect with people and have, you know, multiple sessions on the phone, and there's this back and forth thing going on where they're trying to convince me about why they want to leave their wife or leave their husband or leave right. their job. And I, you know what? I told you on the front end, I don't want to know anything about you
right.
except your name and birth date, because I'm a professional at what I do. I want to give you a detached, objective analysis, like a diagnostic of what I think professionally. And what you do with the information is you decide if you want to do the follow-up work on yourself. That's not my responsibility. If you want to leave your wife or your husband or leave your job, that's your call. I'm just going to give you the overview of what I believe are, like I said, the strengths of character that I believe you have. You can find examples within your own life experience to validate or repudiate. You either, where you can agree or not agree based on your own evidence. And you have to know what your potential character flaws are, the stuff that has screwed you up mm-hmm. because of some bad, stupid choices you've made because you might not have known things. But once you know something and you can validate it and it is true, then you can correct your behavior and make correct choices moving forward and start building up your equity and get some savings in your bank account of the way you behave so you can have more success in all decisions and have a higher quality of life. This is what these are terminologies that my clients have told me over the years that I should start talking like this to make it more understandable for people and to maybe not speak so much in other terms, right? But the bottom line is I got the executive custom version of what I'm doing, and then I have the audio cast. The audio cast is not custom. It's like a general weather forecast of what I believe the behavioral forces are in play every 7 days moving forward. And it was something that evolved over the years, because when I'd speak to clients, and it was so funny because I'd have these follow-up calls that I'd have with clients. This is years ago. And while I'm talking about their own personal chart, I'm also telling them to be aware of this or that other force or energy, these elements that are coming in the next couple of days or a week. And so I'm forcing them now to learn the language of what I'm talking about and how to navigate the weather that's going to affect all of us. It's like tonight up here, there's thunder, there's rain, and there's lightning. And I heard it on the forecast earlier today, and they're telling people, look, if you don't have to go out, don't go out, because the roads are going to be crappy and blah, 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 right? Well, I kind of do the same thing with this weekly audio cast, but I really drill down, and I keep people apprised of long-term behavioral trends that are in play in real time. I show them actual examples, things to watch out for in their personal life, with relationships, things in the workplace.
Looky there.
How to just navigate their way through stuff.
Jordan just called in, I think. Jordan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear him, Chris?
Hey, Jordan.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Not too bad. And yourself?
Oh, man, can't complain. Just sitting here enjoying the show, man.
Good.
You gave me
permission to do your chart there, and I did a little sample, and I hope I didn't reveal too much of your personality, but you did give me permission to speak freely, right, in essence?
Well, so. I mean, I don't remember signing a privacy notice or a waiver that, but I mean, I'm just kidding, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know.
It really hit home. I mean, I'm very, very impressed, and I'm if you only knew how well Joseph knows me. I mean, he's thinking it. I guarantee the dude's smiling right now, like, "Yep, proved you wrong, didn't he?" You know, he knows I'm kind of a skeptic on things like that. So, very kind words, man. I'm glad. It's kind of a reassurance for me, man. Some of us walk the earth just wanting to do good, and wanting to help people.
That's great. And like I said, sorry to interject, but I'm going to lose my train of thought, and I just have to reinforce that one point about, go ahead and keep being a skeptic, because that's true to your nature. But if some new facts come to light that you didn't know before that are kind of self-validating, then it's important that no matter what you're ever involved in, that you always kind of put everything else on pause temporarily and go, you know what? I didn't know that, or something to that effect, because it's only going to help you adapt, improvise, and become versatile at solving stuff, right? And because you have this freedom bent to your expression, it's best for you to always keep your options open, especially when it comes to solving problems. So even when other people think, oh, geez, man, like we've lost the game, or like, look, we've only got 5 minutes left and everybody's tired or whatever, or we don't have the right tools, or I've seen people like you in my own life that have used like tools that nobody would have even thought of using to solve a problem in real time. And I'm watching the guy do it, and I said, what the hell are you using that for? And he wouldn't even like talk to anybody while he's actually solving the problem. And then he goes, there you go. See, I did it. I knew it would work. And we were going like, oh, wow, he's right. I'm telling you. So I think you're cut from that cloth. So just stay open-minded always, and you'll always surprise yourself in a nice kind of way.
By the way, Jordan, your Skype voice sounds a lot better than your phone voice, brother.
Does it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Don't make me come over there.
You got any questions before we let you go?
Yeah, man, I did have a question. A lot of this has been, I know we've kind of heard two different people, give name and number and this and that and other. How do you, Chris, handle, how do you handle giving someone maybe more of a negative thing? Like if someone gives you what you need,
good question.
How does it go? I mean, I know you've been doing this for a long, long time, just for us to know, how do you react to that? Like, you're like, oh my God, this just kind of lines up. This is a horrible dude. You know, this guy sucks, and you kind of know that. I mean, how does that go?
Well, excellent question. And you know what? It's a very tough call at times. But to be very blunt, we all have a dark side. And we all have character flaws. It just depends in what spot and what form they'll take. And like in your case, for example, okay, I would, if I can speak freely, I'll just mention one of them, and it's, I've already kind of touched on it, yeah. But it's the concept of boredom. One of your arch enemies in your mind of minds is, heaven forbid that Jordan gets bored. Because if you don't know how to manage your boredom properly, I could easily see you slipping into the abyss of some kind of reckless behavior, probably more in your younger years, right? But with maturity, you're better than most at keeping your mind occupied by learning new things and, you know, keeping yourself busy, right? So boredom is going to always be an arch enemy, and it'll be lurking around every corner trying to get the better of you, and you have to defeat that monster every time you see it. I could not see you ever admitting, like, if somebody came to you and said to you, with what you know now at this stage of life, if they said to you, look, I'm bored, there's nothing to do, I could almost see you looking at them in complete disbelief and saying, what do you mean you're bored and there's nothing to do? Like, how could you say that? Because somebody like you, there's all kinds of things that you could be applying your mental energies towards, right? So this is the thing. Boredom is the only potential negative with you. But the way I broach it, or the way I speak about some pretty nasty stuff to people when they ask me, because people kind of hold me to account sometimes when they are looking for the real negatives. And I, with their permission to speak freely, I actually go there. And I tell them sometimes, like, if you're going to play the negative hand of a behavior, oh, you can do it. And oh, yeah, you can get away with it too. But the universe has a very nasty way that it exacts justice and retribution from people. And I mean all of us.
Yeah,
and
buddy.
Nobody might ever know the kind of customized retribution that we have to pay as a sentence. You know, when the universe adjudicates that we owe it something, it just takes it. And it could be in ways that are pretty nasty. So that's what I always say to people is, get to know what your behaviors are like. Find the correct and constructive use of what you can do to do honor to them, right, as a human being. And just get to know it. And always play your best of. Don't bring your half-assed version to anything. Do it on your own time at home. You know what I'm saying? Like, practice at home that thing that you're weak in, and just bring the best of to the world, because that's what the world really wants from you anyway. But you have to know what that is, right?
Well, Jordan, man, thanks for calling. I'm glad you got through here. We've been dealing with all kinds of stuff, swapping phones, storms and stuff, and you got through, buddy. Again, you're my right-hand man, dude. I plan on having this guy in studio, too, and I do appreciate your call. We need to talk about this Assassin's Creed movie.
Yeah.
He sounds real excited. All right, brother. We'll talk at you later.
Got you, brother. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, Jordan, take care.
Well, I might run over maybe 5 minutes here, if you don't mind, because we dropped a lot of tech stuff here. So I was going to ask you, I was trying to prevent it, but I'm being nudged here. So, you know my name, right? You know my first name. I think I've emailed you my full name.
Yeah. No, I don't think I got your full name, but I know your first full name.
Yeah, I did email you my full name just a minute ago, though. I don't guess. Maybe I did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Maybe I did not. I don't know.
Well, let me just double check here. I thought it was just Jordan and your father's.
Man, we need to. So, other than, so it's $8 a month to get on the audios, right?
No. It's the audio cast, which is the general forecast, and it's published every week on a Sunday.
That's right.
And it's a 7-day forecast moving forward. It's an $8 sign up with $1. Every 7 days, and it's administered through PayPal. You just sign up, and PayPal does all the invoicing and stuff, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want. So really,
that's pretty nice.
Financed over the year, it's like $50 for the year, but it's usable information that you can put to work literally in real time when you need it, because that's the way clients have explained it to me. like I could give you an example of one lady that's going through some relationship crisis, and I mean she's not alone. We're, you know, we all go through those periods in our life, but she needed some detached, objective opinions that aren't biased, you know, like from her best friend or like from somebody that knows her. She wanted an outsider, and she said from listening to the forecast, the audio forecast, that it provided her with that. And she said that she doesn't necessarily rely on it all the time, but she listens to it consistently and replays it, and she says that she's now getting a really firm understanding of some of her own behaviors that are assets. And when she sees that temporary trend coming around, in this case it was on the last Thursday, she said she was prepared for it and she waited for Thursday to do some pretty important things relating to, for example, emotionally expressing herself in a very organized manner, where she chose the time and place to have a meeting, etc., where she didn't just emotionally react when she was pushed. She just waited and chose the time, and she said that was the best suggestion because she had time to collect herself, right, and not react in the moment. Anyway, I'm giving just an example, but the audiocast is actually a great primer for the custom version, and I actually encourage people to do the audiocast first before jumping into a custom. I mean, there's the custom costs more than the audiocast. It's like $250, but there's a waiting period of like almost a month.
Really?
But I always say, yeah, and I always say to people, like, go with the audiocast first, get used to the language that I use. And I've even had people that go, you know what? I actually do know myself, and you've actually given me some reinforcers that have proved to me that I actually do know myself, and they don't actually even need the executive level. Because there are people out there that actually do know themselves really well, but they didn't understand the language of behaviors, right? But when they hear me going on and on every week about the difference between thinking and feeling and being analytical and psychic, because sometimes that's the same thing, right? A lot of people confuse psychic and analytical, and they think they're two different things. But really, the temperament comes from the same cluster, right? And the people that are like that, when they see all these different descriptions talking about the same thing, they go, well, wait a minute, I'm like that. Good. Then you can apply the behavior more deliberately. Do you know what I'm saying? And those are the first types that usually get what I'm talking about quicker. And anyway, let me just focus here before I go off on another tangent. There we are. Okay.
This will be April 1st, 1982.
Yeah, I got your email here. Sorry, I'm wanting to multitask and just... Okay, well, let me, in another 10 seconds, I will be able to complete this and actually start talking.
Cool. Well, I'll give a shout-out, too, while you're doing that. You guys, don't forget that to sign up for the newsletter on the website. We got all kinds of cool stuff coming for people that subscribe. It's right there on the sidebar on the top right. You can sign up. It's free, and I'm not going to spam you with a whole bunch of affiliate products. I'm actually going to give you some really cool deals. Say, for instance, like tonight, you would have got first dibs to speak with Chris. That's why Jordan got first dibs. And also, you know, check us out on Facebook, Twitter. I'm working on a chat box. I kind of like TuneIn's chat box, actually. But I'm thinking about moving that to Twitter as well. You can support the show by donating in the footer there or becoming a patron. And don't forget to become a subscriber of the newsletter. That's important because you're going to be kicking yourself in the butt later because you didn't do it. So we're about to come into the end of this thing, and I finally got Chris to do a reading
for me. Yeah, I got you figured out here. Well, at least I think I got you figured out. Let's see what you have to say. Okay, right off the top, in the motivational category, I think you are what I would call not a reluctant clairvoyant psychic person, but you probably have more than your fair share of premonition-like experiences, and that's mild. Like it's probably more intense than I'm even letting on. Mm-hmm. You definitely have a desire for truth. It's probably more intense than you might even acknowledge. I don't think organized religion will cut it for you, even though you might learn a lot from it. But the desire for truth is so overwhelming, it actually spills over into your methodology category because it's reinforcing. So the way you're motivated from the inside out, you can't help but express that through your actions and deeds. Now, it's funny, you got a radio show that's oriented towards these subjects, which is great because that tells me that what you are motivated by and what you do are congruent, like there's coherence there, right? So you have no conflict within yourself like a lot of other people that that might. Like you're like totally on with what you're motivated by, so that's a plus. Interestingly, I would encourage you to have more faith in the orderly growth of things in nature and to not be too quick to force something to become something before its time. Do you know what I'm saying? There's an orderly growth pattern to all things, and it's just the way it is, right? So why force something just because you're excited and you want to see it happen like today or yesterday and you get all stressed out and nervous? And I'm not saying you do, but if you ever find yourself becoming impatient with yourself, which could be the case from time to time, just take some time out and like realize that the universe and nature and Mother Earth has her own pace going on, and you got to respect that, right? And that's just how you would harmonize with what is going on and not give yourself, you know, an ulcer or stress yourself out for no reason, right? Now, interestingly, too, you've got the same expectation as your father has and others have, which is to be compassionate, selfless, put the needs of others ahead of your own personal interests. And that's okay. It'll teach you compassion. But it's not okay if you allow other people to burn you out and for you to take on their problems. That would be where you should draw the line and just not cross that, right? Because otherwise you'll be dragging your butt around feeling sorry for yourself and you might not know why. And you'll have all this issue of remorse and regret from stuff from the past. And it's got probably nothing to do with you at all. It's just you taking on other people's stuff, right? Like their problems, and because there's a caring side, right? But to be an advisor to others, that's 100% probability. Not 90 or 80 or maybe, it's like 100% because you got reinforced in three areas. So I got no problem saying that. One other thing, interestingly, you got to learn to, and if you haven't figured this out already, and believe me, I'm not, being condescending when I say this because I think the first time we chatted.
No, man, give it to me straight.
Okay. You got to learn to never repeat the same mistake twice. And if you do repeat the same mistake twice, you have to reprimand yourself. Forget about other people reprimanding you and saying, "What, didn't you see that coming, Joe? Like, what's your problem, man?" Like, you got to be on top of your own game and be very discriminating and analytical. When I say discriminating, I don't mean it in a racial way like a lot of people that don't understand the nature of the word. I'm talking about to be discriminating in the sense where you know the difference between this, that, or the other thing, and where you are able to spot or to recognize a mistake that you're about to make again, and to catch yourself and prioritize the not making of that mistake a second time, right? Like, you got to be so on your game where you temper or control your own mentally impulsive nature before something else or someone else does it for you, right? So just never let yourself slip up that way. But you will get better with age. I've seen people get really good. The last thing, the potential, and I say this really respectfully, because I really don't know you. I met you, last week on the phone or
that's
whatever?
That's it, man, yeah.
Right? Like, so I would say as mentally and tough as I think you are in the analysis and research department, like where you're a tough guy that way, where if it's true, you'll let it go through, but if it's a lot of BS and there's a lot of embellishment. Like your BS detector is pretty hyperactive and it's kind of hardwired, and that's good. You could have actually been a really good detective. Actually, when I think about it,
I wanted to be a detective. Actually,
what?
I wanted to be a detective. I tried out for the police department when I was 20. That was what I was wanting to do.
Isn't that something? Okay, cool. Well, there you go. But you know what? But you can still be. Well, what am I saying? You actually kind of are a detective, but you're just channeling your efforts into knowledge, right? So mm-hmm. you're putting things through its paces by trying to acquire knowledge about different things. So you actually kind of are still. But what I was going to talk about, do you give me permission to just speak about the one liability that I see here?
Dude, if it, you can be as negative as you want to be. I'm an open book.
Okay, I would say it's the potential for thin-skinnedness. You're kind of soft underbelly here. The only dent in your armor, so to speak, is if somebody criticizes you, more probably when you were younger, you might have taken it personally. But if I would have known you like back then and we were like friends as little kids or something, at the first time I would have ever seen you take something personally, knowing what I know, I would have said, hey, Joe, don't take it personal, man. Just treat it as a constructive criticism and learn from it, like that cliche. Like that actually applies to you. But what I would also encourage you to do is to never let... you know how there's people that can be emotionally manipulative, and we all know who these people are in our lives, right? I could think of like two people right now that they use these tactics automatically. It's just instinctive for them, but it never works on me. It works on other people that I know, even though they know better. And I'm going to suggest to you that you should also know better. And when those people try to use emotionally manipulative tactics to get the better of you, you should be able to spot them coming a mile away. And you already have that capability anyway on an intuitive level. But now I'm talking about at a gut, instinctual, emotional level. Like if your stomach starts to feel kind of uneasy when somebody's around, take that as a sign that they're probably going to unload on you in some negative emotional way, and they're going to make you feel guilty about this or guilty about that, or try to get the better of you to do something that you might not feel comfortable with that goes against your own belief system. And it'll be based on trying to emotionally hijack you. And you got to be able to spot these people immediately and deal with the issue and call them out on it. And one great way to deal with people like that is to, I don't want to say embarrass them in front of their colleagues or their coworkers or their friends or loved ones, but from time to time, if the behavior doesn't change, you might have to do that. You might initially do it one-on-one in private, like, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And go around the corner and say, was that really called for you to talk to me like that in front of the team? Like, really? Was that really called for? Now, if they know they got under your skin because you're actually bringing up something, they're going to know they have control over you, right? Well, right. Next time, if the behavior doesn't change, you might want to rip them a new one in front of the team and see how they like that. But that's going to take a little bit of tactical awareness and for you to choose the time to deal with that. And if you're going to rip them a new one and embarrass them in front of the team, do it with something that's tangible and that's a real gripe, you know, like a real issue that everyone will immediately go, that's true. It won't just be like an attack for no reason. Do you see the difference?
Sure, sure.
Because people have a choice. They can either be civilized, polite, and have good manners, or they don't. And if they don't, they have to be taught that by someone in the team. Now, you can do that in a nice way, or you can do it in a not-so-nice way. It depends on the person's capacity to comprehend, right? And, you know, and I don't want to say it's like the way you train a dog, but because dogs are super intelligent. In fact, sometimes I think they're more intelligent than some people that I know in my life. So you might have to train people, and you might have to do it in degrees. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But your only soft underbelly is when people try to screw you up emotionally, and you might cave, and you might acquiesce, and that wouldn't be nice. I wouldn't advise that at all. I want you to become emotionally resilient, where people can say whatever the hell they want, and it'll just bounce off you like not a big deal. But at the same time, you need to correct those people when they're trying to do that, because that's just simply not nice, right?
Right. Well, okay. Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah. What am I... I hate to even ask this because it sounds a little selfish, but what am I, see with this one of your seven questions here, what am I here to learn, I guess, is that what it is?
Sure, yeah.
Major lesson to overcome.
I would say the core thing you're here to learn is how to have faith, not in a religious sense where you're just believing a bunch of dogma, you know, that's in a book somewhere because someone's telling you to believe it. Mm. It's about learning how to trust in your own convictions and what you believe is true, even ironically, if there's no physical evidence to support why something you believe is true ought to be true. So it's learning to be like Sherlock Holmes, you know, the great detective in the story, Sir Conan Arthur Doyle, you know that character,
Sherlock Holmes? One of my favorites.
Right? Okay, so a lot of times Sherlock Holmes, he'd be reverse engineering the crime to something based on like 20%, and, you know, it took the whole movie or the story for him to figure it out. But in the end, it's always him learning to always trust in what he believes to be true, even though the evidence was not all there, right? And he always is correct because he was following where the truth was leading him, no matter how weird the journey was, right? And in a strange kind of way, you would learn a lot from that kind of behavior. And there's an inconvenience to what you have to learn because it's not going to be easy all the time. You're going to have people that are going, what the hell are you thinking about, Joe? Why on earth would you be making a critical decision about this or that when you don't even have any evidence, right? Now, they don't know the way you operate at that, what your basic life lesson is, but because I'm just going on the numbers the way I'm looking at them and the calculation, and I've seen this pattern so often in my life when I'm doing charts for people, there's a 90% probability, if not 100% probability, that the more you learn to trust in your own deductive powers, more than anybody else, you'll never steer yourself wrong, and it might even save your life. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just for mundane, everyday stuff. Like, for really serious stuff, it might take you saving your own life on a hunch for you to finally be convinced that the evidence doesn't necessarily have to be there first before I believe something is true.
When you say save my life, you mean as, like, as a whole, like having a better life would be to do that. Is that what you mean? Or making a quick decision?
Learning to trust your hunches more. Do it in small steps if you need to. Mm-hmm. But, like, when it comes to things like analysis, research, giving advice to people when asked, this is your forte. This is what, like, by the time you get to be an old man, people are going to be coming to you for advice, right? And as long as they're honest and truthful with you and they genuinely want your help and guidance, you're never going to steer them wrong, right? But they have to be honest and
not
liars.
Dude, I got goosebumps on my arm, Mr. Gogos. You have put goosebumps on my arms right now. That's a trip.
Oh, geez.
That's a trip,
okay,
man.
Okay, I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know, for you people that are listening, I would at the very least, okay, and I'm going to say this about a few guests, and I'm going to use my premonition and say Chris isn't going to be the only guest that I'm going to say this about, but I would at the very least, if you guys got $8 to sign up, I would sign up. I think this man can help your life. I think you might actually be one of the best kept secrets on the internet right now. And I say that because you've only been on a few radio shows, man. You should go and be on every radio show you can be on.
Well, thanks for saying that, Peter. Let me just tell you something really quickly. Like, I'm a really, even though, like, I might sound like I'm gregarious and I'm an extrovert and, you know, I'm chatting with you, I chat like this with you even if we weren't on the air. Like, if you're a buddy of mine and, you know, we have barbecues and stuff, yeah, I'd be talking to you like this, like normal. But what happened to me years ago was I took a sabbatical and I stopped doing this stuff entirely. Like, I felt more comfortable learning about how to knock down trees and manage a forest. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I was doing something completely different. I came from a music production background, and I didn't want to do readings anymore. But then a strange thing happened. First week of in January 2013, I was driving two of my friends home, and we almost died in a car accident.
Oh, man.
And I won't even get into all the details, but something changed after that, and I realized that if I didn't get back to what I was thinking I was supposed to do, that my life was going to be extinguished, like it was over. It's like I was telling the universe, yeah, whatever I signed up for to do in this life, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm ready to leave. And it said, okay, I guess you're ready to leave. Well, then I guess you're just going to die. And that's the big takeaway. And I tell you, my friends would even say that if they were here right now, they'd say, yeah, he changed after the accident. And, you know, we survived and everything. But it was, I tasted death. And I'm not the same person I was. I'm different.
Man, you've got to come back on the show, man. There's a lot of, and I'm not talking about just doing readings. Doing readings on the show. I'm convinced. I'm really interested in your ideas, your thought patterns, your how you came to this conclusion of helping people, and just you as a whole, man. See, that's the thing is I don't mind, you know, doing readings and stuff like that, doing the really cool stuff. But whenever I meet somebody like you or have you on the show, just like Corby or, you know, other folks I've had, I get real interested in how you came about this stuff in the very beginning, you know. And that could be a whole nother show, couldn't it?
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's other questions. I mean, my main thing is obviously I like it when people get to know about themselves in ways they weren't aware of before. And I think the world is going through a pretty weird time right now. And as I was saying, I think in another show I did last week or the week before, the host asked me a very pointed question, and I wasn't expecting it. And what I said to her, and I'll just give you the best of what, because it was really like I wasn't even expecting to answer that way. But I said to her, I worry about the human species becoming extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, you know, all the fish that are and all the animals in the oceans that are washing up dead on the shores of
and the birds coming
virtually
out of
every
here.
Country. Yeah. They're just dying. Right. And I'm thinking, that worries me. It worries me. And it worries me that humanity, as a whole is not aware that we could also become extinct. Right. So the way my brain is wired now is I'm thinking, if I can help even one person to become self-actualized so they know what they're best of, then if a calamity ever happens, these people are going to snap. Something's going to snap in a good way where they're only going to be their best of. They're not going to be the half-assed version of themselves, right? And I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it with personal friends of mine that have finally gotten it about what some of their strengths of character are. And they've really become way better at everything that they're doing. They're not masters of everything, but what they have decided to do professionally or how to behave, say, in their marriage, et cetera, they're being their best of version. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And it's nice to see that. I've seen people quit really bad, nasty habits, too, and unlearn a lot of not nice ways of being. For me, constantly, you know, hammering them on a couple of points, but they give me the invitation. They say, feel free, you know, because I ask that, right? I don't want to just be like saying stuff when it's unsolicited. So if you give me permission, then I will tell you what, I'll give you my professional opinion. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent again, so we can chat again another time. Just let me know and we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, that would be great. And again, if people want to get in touch with you, they go to alchemyworld.com. And I've seen your website. It's really basic, but I kind of like that too.
It's very simple. It's like it's so easy to navigate. It's got an about button. It has a privacy button because I'm a real stickler on privacy. I don't do social networking because I have a really strict privacy policy, and it's always been that way.
And I was wondering
the
about
clients
that.
Like it that way, and it's inconvenient because I don't promote a lot, but that's just, I guess, the inconvenience. I have a lot of famous clients that I wish I could tell you who they are, but I can't, but that's the way it is.
Now, what are the names of the radio shows again? The other ones I listened to. I think I listened to both of them. They were both pretty. Just in case audience wants to hear it.
Well, okay. Put it this way: the latest ones. I mean, the Lawyer in Blue Jeans. He's out of San Diego. I just did another one. Was it yesterday or the day before with Francesca Luca out of Boston? She's got a 50,000 watt station there. I think I'm on there tomorrow, actually. Tomorrow's Saturday, right? Is that right? No, tomorrow's Friday. Friday. Saturday morning, 7 to 8, I'm on her thing in Boston. I think it's WMEX. I've been on WCCO radio years ago, and Brad Walton was the host there. He was a really good host. And I've done many, many things in the past. Like I said, I took a sabbatical years ago, and I just stopped everything. But anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you, and I think you got a great show going on. I think your focus is excellent, and I think the timing of what you're doing is excellent, too. Because I think there's a lot of people that don't even know where to begin. And if you're offering up a forum for them to kind of sample this, that, and you never know, one might take to one subject matter and not to another, and that's okay. And I encourage people, if you know somebody in your area that's like a really good astrologer, for example, you know, where they can demonstrate that they're accurate and good, I think you should get a chart done by them. Get to know as much as you can about these disciplines and how you can benefit from them, because our ancestors, I don't want to get dramatic and say, you know, they died for this kind of stuff, but...
well, they did. They did die for this.
Well, yeah, our collective ancestry has so much knowledge that... But it might not be easy to go and find this stuff, but in a strange kind of way, you're making it easy. I'm trying to make it easy for people, right? Sure, there's, you know, we need money to pay our bills and stuff like that, but it's the desire for the knowledge that we're putting out there that I think is the key, right? And I know when I was starting out, like years ago when I was a teenager, I had no desire for any of this stuff. If it hadn't been for one teacher in high school who just literally gave me a bunch of books in a bag, like in the hallway, and he goes, listen, you know, I was like a long-haired musician kid, you know, hey, what's up, dude, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And he said, listen, he goes, I'm giving you these books, I've had them for a long time, and you're going to read them all, and you're going to learn from them. And I looked at him like, yeah, right. Because I was an average student, right? Really, I really was. But that was the best thing he ever did to me, and I couldn't believe what I was learning at the time. And that was when I was a teenager. So I just think everybody has an opportunity with something that you're promoting and doing. It's easier now because, you know, you're doing all the grunt work putting these topics together and presenting them to people, right? So only good can come from that for people that are seeking. And that's what I think is the big takeaway with the times that we're in right now, is we need people to assemble and put together information and present it to people, and to allow people to resonate with certain information, and maybe not with others at the time, but at least to make it available. And I think that's what you're doing, and I know that's what I'm doing too.
That's it. That's, man, you've said it in a nutshell. And that's exactly why I'm doing this. And everything that you even said about me was on point to all the way to the specifics. So, guys, man, there you have it. Chris Gogos, you can go see him, his website on Alchemy World, sign up to his audios. A man that's about self-actualization and has got it down to a scientific method. You can't beat that if you want guidance in your life, folks. Tomorrow night be Jeff Harmon. You don't want to miss that one either. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow night.